Don't worry, I just sort of talk our way into it and I'll find
this
stuff.
Is this close enough?
How
or
do
not?
We sound?
You sound fantastic.
All right.
Banging.
So, Sandy, I've got two questions to start with.
Yeah.
Okay. Why Sandy and not Alexander or Alex? Sandy doesn't make any sense. Should be Alexander Plenty.
Well,
or Alex Plenty.
As you know, Alexander's a Scottish name.
Yeah.
So Sandy, and Sandy's short for Alexander in Scotland, believe it or not.
Oh, right, okay.
I don't know quite how.
Yes, maybe the Zandy bit of it.
And anyway, this is really sort of, my poor late mum will not like me saying this, but she wanted me to be Alexander in case I was important.
Well, you have turned out to be quite important.
So I'm actually, I'm Sandy. If you shouted Alexander in the street, I wouldn't even look around.
And can I say, right, Plenty's quite a strange second name.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah,
it's quite a strange second name, isn't it?
I have to always spell it and people, like delivery drivers, go...
Well, is it spelled weird?
What, Plenty? No, they just sort of, they just can't imagine it's a surname.
I've got to be honest, I couldn't. I kept going, have I got this wrong? I looked at your text the other day, it came through and I was like, have I got your second name wrong? I'm sure that's right. It's very strange. Anyway, right, so let's properly start right now.
Okay.
Welcome to the GMBN podcast. I'm here with Sandy Plenty, and Sandy is the main man at Trailhead Bikes. Is that how I'd say it? Trailhead?
The Trailhead Bicycle Company.
The Trailhead Bicycle Company. We were there only a month or so ago, GMBN-wise. So let's start with that. Let's get the viewers on board with where you're coming from. How did you end up being, like, running an influential shop in the middle of Shrewsbury, which is a mountain biking mecca in the UK? How did all that come to place, as succinctly as you can?
Okay. So I've always worked in the bike industry for my sins. So my dad had a bike shop in Church Stretton in the 90s, so around about 1996 to 98. And we actually gave Neil his first sponsorship.
The Don?
The Don rode for Longmin Cycles. That was...
No way.
Really cool. And my dad really saw something in him and
then he hit a tree and you thought, this ain't going to work.
This is it, sack him off. No, he was great. He rode a Kona Manu Manu. Anyway, that was that. And it didn't work out. We had the shop. I was, wet behind the ears. My dad had come from the timber industry. It didn't work out. And I think I didn't realise it at the time, but that didn't sit well with me, My dad had really tried to support me and back me up, and it hadn't worked. And we'd lost pretty much everything. And I carried on working in the bike industry. I'd lost my way slightly, nothing gnarly, but just sort of didn't know really what I wanted to do. Got back into bikes. Fast forward a good few years, started working for Leisure Lakes. I must give them a good shout out. Massive respect for them. Did 10 years for them, opened and ran the Wolverhampton store. And it was around 2012.
Yeah.
I just thought, hang on a minute. I can bloody do this myself. as much as I love them to bits and still do, I mean, I could line my own pockets possibly. And then Dave Meller, a current bike shop owner in Shrewsbury, got in touch, and there was an opportunity we could open a separate shop together, be my business partner, which he is now, and we did, and here we are. Yeah, and the relevance of talking about Longmin Cycles at the start is I perhaps had this chip on my shoulder and wanted to make my dad proud and put right what didn't work out back in the 90s. So that really spurred me on to try and create a community-based bike shop like you identified in a really good area for mountain biking.
It's a crazy good spot.
It really is. Yeah. I mean, Neil comes from there. It's the only downside, isn't it, really? But, the Athertons are nearby, the Seagraves. There's a reason they all live there. It's because it's the gateway to Wales. Anyway, so the Trailhead was born in 2012. And we're coming up for our 10th year.
Amazing. It's a great shop. And like you said, community-based shop. That's something that was like, even just being there for a day came across was so evident.
Yeah.
That must be, I mean, I really want to talk to you about the industry specifically from a shop point of view, I guess, because it's really hard to understand what's changing at the moment in the industry, because there is an awful lot changing in terms of like how people get bikes and then how they service bikes. And
definitely,
obviously that all really leads towards, well, what is the future of an independent bike store? What does that look like? So I'm really interested to get to that.
Okay.
But I think, like, broadly, before we get into what's wrong with the cycling industry at the moment, like, so from your perspective, is there something obviously wrong or going wrong, or is there something we're not seeing that's about to happen? Well, have you got views on that?
I have. That's an interesting one. And I think if you'd have asked me the same question in 2013, I'd be talking about wheel size.
Yeah.
Thank goodness we don't talk about that anymore. But
thank
that
God,
was a
yeah.
huge transition. You know,
yeah.
there was bike shops left with tons and tons of 26
yeah.
And 29-inch bikes with bad geometry. Mm. That's all sorted, thank goodness. But now the thing I can see happening is the transition between from what I call an acoustic bike through to an e-bike.
Mm.
And the stigma that was attached to e-bikes that's now drifting away. We are selling a lot of e-bikes.
Mm.
In 2017, I think we sold less than 10 e-bikes.
Mm.
Last year, you know, we sold over 120, say.
Whoa.
And that's the massive difference.
Mm.
And I can see it happening in the shop where people are coming in and, do they buy an e-bike or do they buy, you know, a traditionally high-end enduro bike?
Mm.
What do they go for? They're torn.
Mm.
There's this massive... We're in a shift. I can really feel it in the shop.
So if someone comes into the shop with £5,000,
mm-hmm.
which is a good amount of money on a bike,
money.
Do they buy an e-bike or do they buy, I like your term, acoustic? That's better than my analog. I usually say analog, but acoustic's better. What do they go with? £5,000, what do they tend to do?
In terms of, it's tricky because it's led by what their buddies are doing. So
right.
group of five men and women, whoever, riding.
Mm.
One's the elephant in the room on the e-bike. They're,
yeah.
they're doing laps. They're coming back down. Are you all right? They're talking. Everyone's out of breath. You know, they're public enemy number one in that group.
Yeah.
And what we find is you sell an e-bike into a group, then suddenly someone else in the group gets one.
Right.
And next thing,
the group,
they've all
yeah.
got them and they've
yeah.
changed. So to answer your question, it would all depend on that customer.
Yeah.
What circles are they in? And
mm.
So all of our brands are full-fat e-bikes that we sell.
Mm.
And I think there's a place for the half-fat, you know, that the SLs, mm. want for a better word, you know, like the...
Like the one behind us, just there.
Just that, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think those bikes can be ridden alongside acoustic bikes
yeah.
without peeing anyone off.
Mm. That's interesting. I mean, that was almost like, I guess, do you have that conversation when someone comes in? Is one of that your first questions, who do you ride with? Or
yeah, where do you ride? Yeah. Who do you ride with? What do you yeah. want to get out of it? But £5,000 will get you a really solid enduro bike.
Yeah.
It will get you a good e-bike, but when you look closely, some of the components aren't going to be as good as the acoustic for obvious reasons.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a big fan of e-bikes. So I would argue, because I guess I come from it from the positive side of the argument,
yeah.
is that I think if you went in with, I don't know if £5,000 is the right amount of money, but there's a threshold of money that if you spend it on an e-bike, you will be getting the components and maybe the suspension won't be as good, but it will still be a better bike.
Oh, hey, horses for courses. I think you're totally right.
No, I'm right.
Okay, fine. He did
honestly,
tell me at the start of this podcast that he's
I'm always right. Yeah. No, but I would argue, because I'm like, how does the other bike, even though it's got amazing componentry, how does it compete with that bike? Because once you've got a certain level of e-bike, it's just way better. It can do everything.
It's true. It is true.
And it can't. It can. There's nothing it can't do.
Can't go downhill.
Yeah, it can.
As dynamically
yeah, it
as
can.
Well.
Who's on it?
True story.
Who's on it? Yeah, with Neil on it, maybe.
No,
it's interesting, isn't it?
It really is.
It's a fine balance.
And that's that whole thing we're going through at the minute is passion and opinion is coming into people's
yeah.
bike choices. They're being driven by, you know, marketing will influence someone so far, but it comes down to the old school. Who do you ride with? Where do you ride?
Yeah.
what do you want to get out of it?
Yeah. I tell you what, I had an interesting conversation with someone. I was in Margam Park, where I sort of hang out for my leisure near my house. And I was chatting to some mountain bikers. They were all on e-bikes.
Yeah.
And we were just sat chatting, and they were really nice bikes. I think one of them was a Canyon On, and one of them was, and I can't remember what they were, but they were nice. A couple of them were Specialized. But they looked like real, they were sort of like embellished well. And they'd really knew it.
Tricked them out.
So they looked cool, right? So, but this lady come up walking her dog, and she just sort of like just interrupted in the conversation. Oh, hello. And I've seen her around the park. Oh, how's it going? And she looked at the e-bikes and she went, oh God, mountain bikes are amazing these days, aren't you? And it suddenly dawned on me, she didn't see e-bike or mountain bike. She just saw mountain bike.
That's cool.
She doesn't care.
No, that's progression.
Yeah, she just doesn't care. She, like, to her, it was as bigger, it was as interesting as they now have suspension.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, they have little motors now.
Yeah.
But she didn't differentiate. And actually, a lot of people who don't know mountain biking, why would they? They just see an e-bike and go, oh, aren't they fascinating now?
Yeah.
Mountain bikes, cool, I don't know.
Well, they're sadly, brilliant. The whole world doesn't see it like she does, because I'm like that. I think they're brilliant.
Yeah, I love them. Yeah. I love them. They're great. They're such, they're... I rode a race in Sea Otter the other day. I've got this new e-bike hand.
Just dropping that in. Just Sea Otter the other day.
Just the other day. It was normal for me. It really wasn't. But yeah, so I rode in this race against everyone else on e-bikes.
Yeah.
But within that race was Brian Lopes and an 82-year-old guy who'd never ridden a race.
Rad.
He beat me by a long way. But he'd never ridden a race, and it was just like, oh, I got one of these e-bikes last year in lockdown. It's just been amazing. And he was at sea, like, this 80, he'd ridden road a bit.
Yeah.
So he wasn't like out of shape, but he wasn't like super in shape either. And he was just like, I'm racing Brian Lopes today.
Changed his life.
Amazing. Cool. And I was like, well, that's hard to do in any sport. And it means that we've suddenly got this moment in the industry where I would say we're in another golden era, era type two, where we've got kids getting on balance bikes that look like mountain bikes.
Mm-hmm.
So they're mountain biking at two.
Yeah.
And we've got 8-year-olds discovering mountain bikes via e-bikes at that age. And suddenly the age range of mountain bikes doesn't exist anymore.
It's true.
Used to be you'd grow into one.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not big enough for one yet. And then you'd be big enough for a 26-inch wheel bike. You'd ride it until you were maybe 20.
Yeah.
But if you were super extreme into it, 30. And then you'd go on and play golf or whatever, because your body was ruined. But now we've got this massive bracket of audience and customer.
I compare it to the golfing handicap. You know, it's everyone.
That's a great comparison.
Everyone can do it together.
Yeah.
Have you seen, what do you think about, I'm going to ask you a question, what do you think about the electric balance bikes?
I don't really understand them. I mean,
imagine if you're three, you've got this Husqvarna with a bolt-on drill battery.
I love it and hate it at the same time.
So there you go. So I can't
deny.
It's tricky, isn't it?
If Alfie, my son, who's now 21, if he was two now, he'd have one.
Of course he would.
But I'd hate it.
Yeah.
But I'd also be going, any trick?
So
I wouldn't be able to get my head around that, actually. I'm glad I'm not a dad right now at that age, yeah.
And I think there's still people out there that can't get their head around e-bikes. So I can. I'm pro e-bike. And there's lots of, I wouldn't even call them purists. They call themselves purists. But people who are just, I can't have a motor on my bike. I can't. And that's the same as you going, I can't get my head around a nipper on one. I think there's so many, like you said, there's so many age groups, demographics, situations that the e-bike does kind of cover them all.
Yeah, it really does. It's amazing. So what is it, what is the ratio of e-bikes to acoustic bikes going out of the door of your shop? Is it
So we just say mountain bikes?
Oh, mountain bikes, yeah. What other bikes are there then? Is there other bikes?
Gravel.
Oh, you mean... Oh, yeah, they're kind of bicycles, I guess, yeah.
Road, gravel, leisure.
All those things. So I was just being a I love all those things too. I don't know why.
I think, to answer your question, it feels like more e-bikes.
Mm.
And if I'm honest, from a shop owner point of view, that's because they cost more and I see more money from them going in the till.
Yeah.
But actually, it's probably 50-50. Mm. Sometimes it goes one way, sometimes it goes the other.
Even that's remarkable, though, isn't it? In that time, like the change, like you said, from a point where you were selling 10 in, what, 2013 to... How long ago is it, you reckon?
Yeah, 2017, probably less than 10, and now over 100.
Really so short time frame then.
It's massive.
Yeah.
But there was a bike shop local to us that was killing it on the e-bikes. They embraced it very early on.
Mm.
And it's not like we didn't or we were shunning them. It was just, it just didn't come to trailhead.
Mm.
But now it's arrived and we're embracing it.
Were you a bit like the Santa Cruz of bike shops?
No.
We'd never have an e-bike.
No, never like that. And in fact, my mechanic, the main man Rich, who you met, and Chris, they both absolutely love e-bikes.
Mm.
And Rich is, you know, raced World Cup, raced World Champs,
yeah,
probably one of the fittest guys in the shop. And it's just, he's only ever on an e-bike. Mm. He loves it, laps it, and you know, it's been great having him in store. Just really driving it and being passionate about it and being willing to stand there and go, no, you're wrong, they're great.
You just said something then that really shows how good your store is.
Oh, go on.
It's like that. He's one of the fittest guys in the shop. It's like, well, that's a proper shop, isn't it? When all the people, like, when you like get, I thought you were going to say in Shrewsbury, you're like, it's hard to be the fittest guy in our shop. That's a proper
that's
shop.
That's a benchmark.
That's a shop.
Yeah.
That's what you should ask, ladies and gentlemen. When you go into a shop, you're like, right, who's your fittest rider? And they go, oh, we don't really ride. Walk out.
Well, I think the fittest rider in our shop's Corinna.
Oh, really? Yeah.
She's badass. Yeah. And so is Matt. Everyone is. I'd say me and Sam are the most unfit. Our bikes get pushed.
Yeah.
But we still love it.
Yeah. Well, that's what it's all about. So let's talk, like I said, I want to talk about the industry a bit. What would be your, these are sort of leading questions. I don't know if I've got them in
the
right
order. Are they wind-up questions?
No. Okay. I guess these are quite serious questions, actually. What would be your advice to someone who wants to get into the bike industry now? Just the bike industry, not necessarily a store, because I'm going to come to that, but... What would be your advice? Like someone, you know, one of our younger viewers is listening now and they're like,
they
love
get in.
It. They want to get in. It might not be through riding, you know, because that's not achievable for everyone for whatever reason. But
come down to your local bike shop. I'm going to say that because that's how I got into it. But have you got a job? No, sorry, we've got... Can I just put the cardboard out for you? Can I sweep up?
Yeah.
Do you know what? I've given Saturday lads and lasses jobs because they've pestered me.
Yeah.
And they haven't pestered me in an annoying way. They've somehow done it in a passionate way. And I'm like, they want it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm not going to let you work for free because that's just not happening. But I'll tell you what, let's do every other Saturday. Come and sweep the floor, do this, do that. And when we have work experience, people, on the first day, I often don't let them make a cuppa or do any of those naff jobs. I'm like, right. £3,000 bike, just build out of the box. And they're like,
whoa, you know.
But I think to get into it, approach a bike shop, see if you can get a Saturday job. I think all of the, what we call reps, you know, the sales representatives that represent brands and travel around the country selling, those guys and girls typically would have started in a bike shop.
That's true.
Definitely. It is the gateway. And you're gaining experience. You're there with the end consumer face to face. You're dealing with real life situations in a bike shop. I think that's the way in for me. Other routes, just ride your bike.
Yeah.
Ride your bike and surround yourself in good, positive people.
I'm glad you said about that's your view, because I was sort of going to say my route into motorcycle trials was, which is a very similar sphere in some respects.
It's a great sphere.
Yeah, a great sphere. That was my way to be in the industry. I was never going to be Dougie Lowing, but I rode in. I worked at Dave Renner Motorcycles down in Staines, and it was incredible, because I remember one of the first things he got me to do was, he was like, just jump in the van. So it was his van with Dave Renham Trial Shop written on the side. So instantly I was like, oh my God, I'm driving Dave Renham's van.
Yeah.
Shout out to Dave Renham, right? Because he's just one of my favourite people ever. And And he was like, just pop over to Yamaha and pick up these bits. And I, to me, at that age, it was like I was going to the importer spot of Yamaha. Rad. I thought I was going to where, but you know, Kenny Roberts must hang out here too.
Yeah.
You know, because it was like Yamaha. It was just so amazing when you're that age. Everything's just like,
yeah.
Oh my God, I'm going to Yamaha today.
But what he's done there,
yeah,
is he empowered you straight away.
Yeah.
And he made you proud to be working for him.
Made me clean the van when I got back.
I bet he did, but yeah, bloody you got the good job
first. I washed
first.
That van a lot. I washed it more than it was dirty. You know what I mean? It's like, well, go and clean the van.
Is this pre-mobile phones?
Oh, God, yeah.
So it's not like you could give it the big Instagram or...
No.
Check me out, I'm off to Yamaha.
No, oh, no, there was no big Instagram then. It was
on the landline at home.
It was a long time. I think it might maybe quite close to the beginning of the internet.
You had to write your mate a letter. Guess what I did today?
That's a good segue, right? So now, what would be your advice to someone who wanted to start a bike shop right now? So they've decided, they're like you, they're like, right, I could do this myself.
Mm-hmm.
What would be your advice? Is it a good idea?
Yeah, I think the golden rule is do what you say you're going to do when you said you're going to do it. And if you put that into every part of running a business or a bike shop, keep customers in the loop, have integrity, you've got a good chance to survive. But also, which you mentioned earlier, we're very lucky to be in Shrewsbury. So make sure you open that shop where there are a network of trails and a community of riders. But also surround yourself with good people. I think Trailhead's a bit like, that's a bit naff, but we're like a band. Yeah, at times I'm the front man giving it the big one, but you need the drummer and the bass player and you need everyone else to be tight and backing you up. Like, I may have come up with a name and put it on top of the shop, but it's all the staff that run it. And I'm not there today, and I guarantee they're having an awesome day, probably better than when I am there because I'm not interfering with everything. And I think just surround yourself in good people. And even if you only have one Saturday lad to start with or Saturday lass, just make sure they're the right person and they're representing you well. And
so that, I mean, that really sort of positions it though, doesn't it? Because you're talking about a store that's all about serving, really intimately serving a community of riders.
Yeah.
If you haven't got that, is it like a no-oper?
Create the community.
Right, okay. So you got to make it. Build it and they will come.
We did shot rides. Well...
Or were they already there?
Yeah. So we decorated the shop, we opened it up, and I remember sitting there like, what if no one comes in? I'm going to look a right wally.
Yeah. Good.
And they did come in, and we had shop, we need to get back to them, but we had shop rides, Martin, for the first 8 years, and we'd get like 70 people sometimes. Average number would be 30. You'd be riding around and be thinking, wow, they've come out to ride with us. This is cool.
Yeah.
Oh, you know yourself when you put a GMBN ride on and it's amazing.
Well, we've only done it once. We did it in Bentonville the other day and 200 people turned up. We were at the top
in America.
The top of the trailhead in town.
Yeah.
Like the trails there, it's mad. It literally starts in the high street pretty much. And so there's 200 people at the top of this trail. And we were like, what do we do now? Well, we thought like... So we were in America, we thought like 10 people are going to turn up. We were starting to think actually quite a few people might turn up the day before. We were starting to all start guess numbers. Eventually, yeah, it's 200 odd people.
That's mad.
And then we're like, so I guess we'll all go down this. We did like a train of 200 riders. Oh, went down this trail. It was absolutely insane.
Did you film it?
Oh yeah, we did a video of it. It was great. It was brilliant. It was a mad, mad moment. But like I say, those ride outs are just, they're amazing fun.
That's the way you're not talking shop. You're not giving it a hard sell.
Just having a good time.
They get to see you for who you are and you just ride in the local trails together, everyone on the same. And I think that's...
To be fair, they did see us through who we were and they all left at lunch.
We're out of here.
Oh, you're idiots. All right. Okay.
But yeah, no, I think that's it. I think just embed yourself and if there's no community, make one.
Yeah.
But do it in a genuine way because...
But why shouldn't I just go and buy my bike online and ignore all you guys because you're way too expensive? See what I did there? Hit him hard. I made him my friend and then it's over.
Ready for this. I'm ready for this tactic. Do you want the answer?
Go on.
Okay, so one thing you can't buy online is love and support. And yeah. Do you know what? For those people out there who are competent mechanics, they know what they want. Good on them. Like, buy a Canyon, buy a Common Sal. They're all great bikes. I'm not a shopkeeper who slags off these direct brands. There is a place for them, but there's also a place for us giving service, backup, support, advice. Some people want it. Some people don't. Some people need it, don't realise they need it. They'll go and buy a bike online. We'll service that bike. We'll look after them. We won't, you know, push them out because they didn't get it from us. And then maybe we'll send them the next. We'll sell them the next bike. Maybe you buy your van or car from one place and you get it serviced somewhere else. Normally, typically, and so we can be those. We can be those guys. We can service your bike that's come direct. Yeah. We can sell you a bike, and we'll just try not to get bent out of shape if you do buy a bike online. We're trying to be open-minded about it and inclusive.
Does it frustrate you when, like, these bigger brands, like, I guess with, like, Specialized is most notable, when they start taking on this model of, like, the Canyon model or the, you know what I mean? Like, because some brands have come into it and it's how they've always done it. So yes. You kind of understand it better because YT are like...
Well, that's how they do it.
Yeah. Whereas there's other brands that are suddenly going, okay, we might need to do it like that. And they're... Does that feel like they're deserting you a bit, or?
I guess I probably would have felt that way when I just started out, and I was perhaps, you know, a little bit naive, and I just took it personally. But now I think, you know, if that's what they've got to do, then they're not the right brand. They don't fit us. So, Cube have been absolutely amazing to us. I mean, you've been to the shop. It's tiny. Cube, one of the biggest e-bike and just bike manufacturers in the world. They treat us like we're the big guys. And that means I can treat every customer really well. They back us up. Yeah. And same with Santa Cruz and the other brands we sell, Nuke Proof. We are looked after in a way that makes me want to really push those brands, but also... They give me the tools in the box to give really good customer service to my customers. So to answer your question, if people want to go direct, then that's great. Crack on, but you're losing your mini pockets of customer service and marketing and, you know, everything that comes with a little local bike shop or a big bike shop, bricks and mortar. Will always have its place.
I mean, I definitely saw when I was at your shop the other day, I witnessed it where I can't remember the specific issue, but I think someone had come in. He might have even had a Cube, and I think he'd either broken something that was hard for you to get now because of supply or something like that. But I remember you were saying to him, he was frustrated that this had happened to him, but it certainly wasn't that. You know, the world was against him, but he was like, oh, okay. But you were like, we are going to get this sorted out. Like, don't worry. I think you said literally, we've got your back. We are going to get this sorted out. And he went out confident.
Yeah.
And like, to find that confidence online, well, when did you last buy something on Amazon and thought it will definitely be here tomorrow?
Yeah.
You're like, I think it's coming, but I'm not really sure from where or why or, you know, it's. That just isn't what happens when you buy online, is it? That confidence.
And you lose a bit of control because you press a button and that's the last time
you
hear
it. And you're like, I think it's gone through.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I just spent £80,000, I don't know what's going on.
Too right.
Yeah. So it's quite an interesting shape, this conversation, actually, because I feel like we sort of touched on like how it's working for you in a shop as an independent dealer. But what does it look like in 5 years? What is happening, do you think, in the industry? In 5 years, do we have more or less independent dealers? Do we have most bikes are only online? Where's it going now? Like from that sort of shape we've created, where's it going now?
I think, we've got to keep evolving. And it might end up that everyone goes direct sales. So every bike, they have partner stores. They get shipped there. And we become more of a service, as in the workshop-based. Maybe that's how we need to go, or we get forced to go. I still believe there's certain brands out there that we've mentioned in this conversation who will never go direct. And I honestly believe that from conversations I've had with them over the previous years.
Wasn't Santa Cruz, was it? That was my they'll never go e-bikes joke. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Well, do you know what? That's that happened.
It was Santa Cruz, wasn't it?
Yeah. Hey, they got new owners and they changed. But you're right. Things do, so what you just said is totally right. I could be living this this dream and then everyone goes direct. But how will we change? Well, we won't change customer service. We'll do our best to keep that top-notch. And it might be that we end up selling absolutely no bikes. We just service them. Maybe that's...
I mean, servicing's got to be a massive part of your business, isn't it? It's got to be a...
It's a huge percentage, and I'm really glad you've mentioned that. So in my opinion, rightly or wrongly, the workshop is the reputation of a bike shop. So I could be out front, giving it the big one, this, that, and the other, and ultimately they're thinking, he's a salesman, he's a gift of the gap, blah, blah, blah. But when their bike is fixed on a Friday afternoon and they can go to Revs last minute, it's like, that bike shop sorted me out. And that's what they go and tell their buddies. So workshop, yes, brings in a good percentage of the turnover, but provides nearly all of the reputation.
Right. That's really interesting.
That's my opinion.
Yeah. No, that's really interesting. And that is hard to do online. It really is.
But there are some people killing it online.
Yeah.
And I'm never going to sit here and slag off online. It has its place. And I think, you know, Christ, we sometimes can't get something from a supplier. We've got we had like a Nuke-proof custom build on the other day and we needed a brake mount.
Yeah.
Couldn't get it. Jumped on one of the bigger online stores. Boom, came the next day. And I'm like,
that's pretty
okay,
good.
I can see why. And we got the bike out the door. So.
Yeah. That's interesting. I actually, with the supply shock thing at the moment that's happening, one of my friends runs a company in Canada that builds hand bikes like I'm riding at the moment. And these bikes have got three chains on them.
Right.
So they're trying to like build this fleet of bikes that they're selling. They're all, you know, sold. They've just got to build them.
No chains.
But the chains. Like, so the other day I had two giant boxes turn up at my house from Chain Reaction Cycles of just chain. I was like, what the hell? And then I got an email about an hour later saying, oh, dude, I hope you don't mind, but we're literally hunting down chains.
Yeah, we shipped them.
And we've shipped them from Chain Reaction to you. Can you send them to us? Because they just couldn't.
Yeah.
And that's they're literally looking on shops for their chains to build their bikes because it's that hard to get stuff. Is it like that for you?
We, the other day, young Sam mechanic, we were like, we took this job on. I'm the king of, oh, yeah, we'll do it. And you can see the staff are like, oh, God.
Yeah, how are we gonna do it?
We did the drivetrain change, so chain ring cassette chain on a gravel bike. And there was just no 11-speed SRAM cassettes. Like, SRAM's lead time was 2026 or something crazy. And I think it was 2023 December, actually, all jokes aside. So we went on eBay. And we were looking at good condition second-hand ones.
Yeah.
I can't do that. Found one. We paid full RRP plus shipping for it. Didn't tell the customer, not just for no reason.
Yeah.
Made no money on that, but the customer got sorted. We ended up doing that twice.
Wow.
From eBay, because shops didn't even have them.
Yeah. So how long is that going to go on for?
Three years at least.
3 years?
That's how I feel. That's not scaremongery. I don't think it'll get better, but I think... So we saw it with 29-inch tyres.
Mm.
Now they're back in stock. We can't get 27.5. It's just, it's funny.
Wow. Is it funny?
No. It's actually a living nightmare.
If you could have seen his face right there. Let's talk about something more lighthearted. When we were in your store, I was just in love with your Klein attitude you've got hanging on the wall there. Guys, it's gorgeous. What is it, Gator Fade?
The Gator Fade. I think I just love the name.
It's just brilliant, isn't it? Everything about it is brilliant. It's beautiful. Me and Neil had a conversation sort of after that. We were like, well, I wonder what bikes we'll be putting on the wall in 20 years' time. And Neil's just got this lovely Orbea. He's just kitted it out. It's typical Neil, super stealth.
He must love it because he was talking about it in the pub last night.
It's lovely. It's lovely. Yeah. And I said, oh, what bikes are you going to have on your wall? And he said, that Orbea. And I said, really? You're going to have a bike on your wall and someone's going to come in and go, no way, an Orbea Occam. No, they're not going to do that. They're not going to know what that bike is. It's not going to be memorable. It's going to be gone in history. It's lovely now.
Oh, yeah.
So what is it, in your opinion, because you're someone who's got a Klein attitude hanging on your wall.
Yeah.
What's going to be hanging on your wall in, I don't know, what's the time frame we should go with? 30 years? 25 years.
Okay.
What are you going to have?
I think it'll be a bike that's associated with a rider. So maybe I could have your Cannondale.
No, because that's from one from old already.
Okay, so you're on about a bike from now.
It's got to be that's out now or just been out now recently within a 5-year space or something like, you know.
I think a Santa Cruz Nomad is super iconic in like that baby blue and pink colour.
Mm.
Yeah, that kind of thing. I've actually managed to keep, I bought it back off a customer.
Mm.
I had a custom painted Nomad in Gulf Racing colours that I raced Trans Provence in 16. And I can see that going on the wall because of its sort of emotional attachment.
Mm.
So modern bike, custom paint job. Custom paint jobs is kind of what's making bikes stand out at the minute.
Mm. There's some lovely custom stuff, isn't
there? Yeah, Ali down at
Fat You've got Creations. A lovely custom blue Trans Am, haven't you? Sorry, just looking at it.
Yeah. Rattlecan.
You've got a custom Rattlecan, haven't you?
No, I think, it's a good, really good question, Mark. What would you put on the wall?
I've got to be honest, right? I don't think there's much around at the moment that is going on a wall worthy. I think it's something with a custom paint job, maybe. Someone's bike that did something special, maybe.
Yeah,
either an iconic video or a race result.
Seminax.
Something like that. Yeah. But who's getting those? You know, how many of those are we talking about? So, I mean, the thing is with the Klein attitude, there was lots of them.
Yeah.
But it is literally a moment in the sport where lots of bikes started to look that way.
Yeah.
They suddenly, there was this big tubing and these, they suddenly looked like what everyone, it was the thing that made everyone go, have you seen those mountain bikes?
Yeah.
Like, Matt, have you seen these things called mountain bikes? And it went... It just suddenly was like gorgeous,
and the paint.
Yeah, just the it's paint always just was beautiful.
Unreal. Yeah,
and at the moment, I mean, there isn't. It's quite hard to buy a bad bike now.
What about this? Do you
bikes
think...
are really good, but they're all the same. They're all like really good, but they're all like none of them are like So I don't know which one it would be now. I can't think of one. Maybe no. Honestly, I can't. They're all kind of. I did go to Ibis the other day and sort of fell in love with Ibis just because of the love they put into making it.
Yeah.
I was like, but would I see that when it's on a wall? Don't know. Did like them though.
Another thing is when you're, I'm 43 at this point in life, I can't really afford to keep a bike. I'm going to put that on the wall in 20 years. I love it.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to try and then buy the bike back, rebuild it. There's a lot of effort goes into arriving with a bike worthy of going on the wall. But one question, do you think anyone will ever put an e-bike on the wall? You need some big clips, wouldn't you? Some right, really metal anchors.
Will we look back? You know how we'd look back at like, a really old blue Trans Alp? No, just kidding, Matt. Imagine looking back at like a real pre-65 Trials bike and you'd just be like, I don't know, like a Triumph or something like that.
My mate's got an aerial.
Oh, like you just look at, are we going to look back at like the Bosch Motor CX Performance?
Have it on a pedestal.
From this year, in like 100 years, are people going to be looking and going, God, they were amazing. Listen to the sound of that.
Yeah.
No.
Listen to that. When you get to 16 miles an hour.
We're losing a lot of soul, aren't we? Our bikes are losing a bit of soul because maybe I'm coming a bit at it from a bit too much from the motorcycle point of view, but there's always been a heartbeat, whether it be the heartbeat of the rider or the engine of the motorcycle, there's been this heartbeat. But now this technology is coming in and adding a layer that's sort of a bit soulless.
Bit quiet.
Bit quiet and a bit like... Well, hills aren't a problem, are they? What's, yeah. What's the big fascination? Just ride up it. It's like, well, you're not riding up it.
But this is the that man is, who you were just telling me how great they were.
I hate e-bikes. If there's one thing you should know about me, dude, it's like that. My opinion changes. Like
what those
wind.
Guys in the Muppets when they're in the gallery? Yeah, they go, I hate it. It's terrible. Yeah, it's brilliant. I love it.
I'm terrible for that. I can start a dirt shed show with a topic. By the end of it, I completely disagree with myself. I'm just not. Yeah, I'm easily influenced. You're turning me around. How are you doing this? How are you doing it? So go on, you've got to pick a bike. You've got to put one on a wall. We're 25 years. I might make this a constant for our podcast from now on.
Yeah, which everyone bike would you
has
put on
to,
the wall?
Everyone has to put a bike on the wall in 25 years' time, and you can go from any era in mountain biking. So you can go with some of the old ones. It could be the Clydesdale, maybe. But what would you go with?
It would go
or something you haven't got yet and you'd love to get. That would be good to know.
I sold it last year, but I had Sean Palmer's Specialized downhill bike. That was on the wall at home.
Oh, why did you sell that? Actually, you probably sold it for a very good reason.
Because someone
gave you an absolute fortune for it. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think we got the drive tarmac. But no, the Klein is on the wall now. I'm going to keep that on the wall for the next couple of years. Mm. And I'm going to sell it to someone, maybe yourself, or we'll do a swap.
Mm. Nice. I've got a couple of nice Cannondales. Yeah. I tell you what, I've got Crappy one of file. My...
I mean, sorry, Cannondale.
How dare you? How dare you? I've got a blue Cannondale, factory-painted Cannondale. It's a Beast of the East rear end, but it's got a headshock on the front. So it's a one-off geometry.
Right.
That they built for me. So they basically put a headshock on a Beast of the East for me.
That's cool.
So it's really like level chainstays, like high bottom brackets.
Handmade.
Yeah, handmade from Canada and the US, factory painted. But it's just the frame and fork, and I've got to somehow find a way to build it up. But to build it up from that point's blooming hard.
Yeah.
Because you need a lot of very rare stuff.
You're chained to eBay.
Oh mate.
Just scrolling.
I just can't. I wouldn't know where to start. I need to do that at some point. So that's what I'd put on my wall. But
so you'd go retro?
I'd definitely go over retro Canada, but I have to really. I have to. My past is fixed in it. I'm a Cannondale. What would I be? I'm like one of those people who's been
stole what?
You know, when someone's been hijacked and they decide it's a good idea after a few years, they've been in hijacked situation for so long, they decide that's the way to live.
Just I'm go
like,
with it.
I'm just one of those people. I have to have a Cannondale. You're like, no, you don't need to. You could buy another bike. No, I can't. No, they'd find out. They wouldn't care, but they'd find out. They aren't even they anymore, are they? They're not they. They're someone else now.
Yeah.
Some great big money laundering.
Well, we're off topic now.
Yeah, we are. Like I said, welcome to the podcast with me. You still haven't told me the bike. Sorry, okay. I keep interrupting.
I've been thinking about it, though. Yeah. I've been thinking about it. It would be a 1995 Team RTS GT with a Tioga disc drive on the back.
Mm.
And it would be Mag 21 SL tie forks. Mm. And that's everything
nice
I've never owned yet and I always wanted when I was a nipper. I had an LTS, so I was very fortunate.
Yeah.
Had that in 96, 97. But the RTS, just the shape of it, the ball bearing frame.
Who in your head do you put on top of the RTS?
Because
Warner looked great on the RTS.
Did he?
He looked like Rob, but he...
Jason McCroy.
Yeah.
Or Rich Guppy, who works with me.
Yeah.
So he rode one, and I was up the woods. We're the same age, but I'd be like, I don't know, I'd have a puncher on the side of the track at Eastridge because my tyres were way too thin, and I'd be fixing it, and then Rich would come past, and you'd hear a disc drive just rumbling like thunder. The bike didn't work. Looked
so
amazing.
Was that when he was on... JMC would have rode that when he was on Hardesty's cycle.
Yes, Hardesty. Yeah. And he had that kit, didn't he, that was black and white polka dot.
Yes.
Was it Hardesty? Yeah, it was Hardesty.
Hardesty cycle?
Not Langsett. Langsett was PT, wasn't it?
Yeah, Hardesty cycle.
That was cool. Yeah, and he went to Mammoth, didn't he?
Kit. Yeah.
To the Kamikaze.
Yeah.
And smoked all the Yanks in.
Yeah.
On that bike with
The Mag 21.
Because then he went, when was he on salsa? He was on salsa with that like sort of orange, fleck. Green, yellow fleck.
Splatter
kit.
Painted.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was that before?
Maybe after. I don't know.
I hope there's some people listening that can put in the comments somewhere.
Yeah, that would be good to know, actually.
I'm going to say mid-90s when him and his dad went out.
Yeah, I think it would have gone Hardesty, Salsa, because that was Salsa MBK, wasn't it?
Do you not think Salsa was before?
I don't know. Don't you know, Matt?
I don't.
We're looking to Matt. He's not
necessarily... He was born in that, yeah?
Wow.
Yeah, you're not going to know. You're not going to know.
But yeah, that's what would go on the wall. A Team RTS... but fully tricked out.
Yeah, yeah.
Had to be the Toyota disc drive.
Yeah, yeah. No, I wouldn't mind that on my wall either. That sounds pretty good. Who's now we've got to JMC. Come on, who's your favourite rider of all time? That's a good question. I could talk about favourite riders all day long.
I love this. Now we're on one.
I've got it.
Two. I've got loads, actually, but the two big celebrity ones is Sean Palmer.
Yeah.
For his... The way he ran his marathon, the way he was so cocky, but also you can't do that and not back it up.
Yeah.
So he was making it hard for himself. He was giving it the big one on the world stage.
Mm. Boy, was he. Blimey.
Then he had to go and back it up. Mm. That was cool. But if we go further back, Jimmy Deaton. Jimmy Deaton rode for one of the early Yeti riders, and his nickname was Jimmy 56 Mile an Hour Deaton. And anyone with that name is a badass. I found him on Instagram the other day, and Doddy, if you ever listen to this, will know who he is and a lot of the other Yeti fans in the UK. Jimmy Deaton was...
I feel like I've seen a Yeti with his name written on it, and that's the only reason I know his name.
World champ, downhill, 1989.
Wow. That is...
That's badass.
That really is a long time ago, man.
So I like those two old school names, but got a lot of respect for Rach Atherton and...
Yeah.
And G-Man.
Do you think Rach is going to come back and race?
Yeah, I think she's going to come back one time, smoke them, and then go back to be Superman.
That would be amazing, wouldn't it?
Oh, I hope
I'd love that.
If you're listening, Rach, just do it, because, silence.
She probably still can.
She's quietly... practicing.
Yeah, I mean,
she's
it's
in the
not
right
like
place.
She's not riding. Yeah, I mean, she's got a great place to ride, and she's just so
her brother's
flipping
all right.
good. Brothers can get her up to speed. That's for sure.
Well, I think she can get them up to speed.
Yes, yes, yeah.
What about you? What about you? So three: past, present, and future.
Jordi Tarrés, Thierry Michaud. No, I can't do trials riders, can I?
Dougie Lampkin.
Dougie's something else. If we get me talking about trials, look, Matt's shaking his head. If we start me off on trials, I'll never get back into mountain biking.
Okay, let's do the mountain biking.
The mountain biking riders I love. Missy Jove.
Yeah, you said that earlier.
She's just
what is it?
You know when you meet someone and you've never met anyone like it before? Like you only meet Rob Warner once. You don't meet another person and go, "You're like Rob Warner."
No, true.
Don't happen. There's only one Rob Warner, and Missy Jo's like that, but nothing like Rob Warner. She's just, I just remember meeting her, and I knew all about her in terms of like a mountain bike fan beforehand.
Yeah.
And then when I met her, I was like, wow, it's like what you read in the magazine, but she's real. And she's just the most genuine person, but the genuine bit about her is that she's like really exciting and different, and just like anything could happen.
Really?
Do you like, I don't know what's going to happen next.
Do you have a night out with her?
We only at team camps and stuff like that. I was lucky enough to hang out with her a bit at races and stuff like that, but I was often on the periphery of seeing what was going on, you know, because she was sort of
unfolding.
She was the big shot on the team, so
okay,
didn't want everyone like the trials riders bothering her all the time.
Did she have any, what do bands call it, riders?
Entourage or ride? No, she's the most, just the loveliest person.
Oh, really?
Not a big shot in that sense at all.
She reminds me of Josh Briceland in that respect.
I think that would be a fair comparison. Just like a bit of a force of nature, but definitely very down to earth.
Genuine.
And from a very real background, you know, she'd lived a life before cycling that was... definitely prepared her for anything mountain biking was going to throw. Yeah, so she was... So definitely Missy Jove. I think she's just a fascinating person. God, it's difficult, isn't it?
I know.
So many amazing riders.
Let's go for a present one, then.
A present one.
Neil Donoghue.
Well, you know what? I do love... Neil Donoghue has got a fabulous riding style. I'm not kidding.
Oh, we talked about this in the pub last night. He's got
a fantastic... When Neil goes into racer mode, when he's out on a shoot, you're like, oh, yeah, here we go.
Foot
and
out.
You can see it. We were in Bentonville the other day and they were coming down through this little line. There was a little train of them. It was Neil, Blake, Annika Beaton.
Yeah.
And the guy, I've forgotten the guy's name from Bentonville who was riding with us. It'll come to me in a moment. Lovely chap. He's an ex-World Cup rider. And they were all coming down through this little thing. We were all getting video of them. And Neil come down leading them, always a bad idea, because he was like, right, they're chasing me, so I better go fast. And he went through these line of trees and he nearly hit this tree. Oh my God. If he'd hit, he brushed it with his elbow. So he just got the tiniest little graze, right?
Yeah.
But you know, everyone watching, you know when everyone just goes silent, like, and he just managed to get through it. But if he'd been let's say 5 centimeters more towards the tree, he would have shattered his hip off his body. It would have been disaster. And it was like, that is a racer right there.
They just
can't stop themselves going to the edge.
Have you seen him do his signature one-footed table?
Yeah.
I mean, it never gets.
He's great. He's just got such a fabulous riding style. And he is fast. Although, saying this, Sandy, some interesting news in the racer respect, right? Matt here filming nearly beat Neil in a race the other day.
Neil was talking about you last night in the pub.
He nearly, because he's
lent you an e-bike, right?
He's not too shabby himself over there.
I've heard over a pint last night all about your. I didn't put two and two together.
See, we're like your shop, look. Even our creators are quicker than the presenters.
Good.
So Matt's actually quicker than every other presenter, but Neil. It's basically what that means.
Get him this side of the camera.
I can't imagine you this side of the camera. Would you? No, I don't think you would enjoy that. No, no, I don't think that would be your thing, would it? Like that.
So who is
this? This is stupid. I don't know. Right now, I would say someone I really, really love, but I'm really worried about.
Okay.
I really worry where he is in his career is Giaffin.
Mm-hmm.
He is incredible.
Agreed.
He is an incredible athlete.
Yeah.
Like, anytime anyone's ever met Giaffin, they would have gone, whoa, like, he's just like one massive muscle.
He's a freaking specimen.
He's like a muscle with eyes, is how I've always referred to him. He's so mega fit. He's like his genes are just built for being epic.
Gnarly.
And I remember riding with him when he was really new to mountain biking, a young rider, right?
Yeah.
And he is loose. That kid's nuts. But he's got really good. But he was already like, I'll go fast, watch this. Or I'll jump high, watch this. He's got that loose cannon-ness.
Yeah.
But he's been able to harness it into world championship, World Cup winning speed, you know, which is not easy. That's a very tricky thing to do because there's loads of crazy people.
Yeah.
But he's got the crazy, but he's managed to control
harness it.
But now he's in this era where he's probably focusing more on, because he's a Red Bull rider, he's focusing on doing some big edits.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing G's going to do is going to be anything other than absolutely ludicrous.
Yeah.
Because that's how he rides. He just goes either ludicrously fast or ludicrously big.
Big.
And that is a very, very treacherous zone. I mean, the crash he had recently was terrifying for everybody. I'm sure it was even more terrifying for him.
Yeah.
And it just makes me think, wow, mountain biking has not got a career ceiling like it used to have. And we've got riders like G who are then open to their creative process rather than their racer process. And that's not easy to do. Imagine being Danny Mac, but everything you do is 100 times more dangerous than what you do as Danny Mac.
Yeah.
That's not an easy space to live in.
No, and it's... being sort of living reasonably close to G, I can see what's happening with his rehab at the minute. I mean, he cannot wait. He's back on the bike now, but he just wants to be back where he was pre last accident. And I just want to say to him, dude, you're a legend. You've accomplished more than anyone could ever dream of. Maybe let's just sort of hang out.
I said it to him the other day when I was, I don't know if I mentioned it, when I was out in Sea Otter, just racing and stuff.
Sea Otter, tell me about it.
Yeah, yeah, it's just an event somewhere over in California or something. It's no big deal. But I was over there and he, I was chatting to him there and he was walking around and you could definitely see, you know, he like was struggling to stand all day at the event and was, it was definitely well over being stood about at an event. But he's obviously working so hard to get back, to get that fitness back. And like I said, it's like an incredible level of fitness as well. But I sort of said to him, oh, dude, you know, you don't like, I was sort of trying to be like, suggest, oh, mate, you don't need to push yourself so hard. You don't need to. But in all honesty, in front of G, saying it sounds kind of ridiculous.
He ain't going to have it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of said what actually came out of my mouth was more like, you know, dude, you did probably just hang up your boots if you wanted. It was very difficult for it to come out as a genuine suggestion because you're stood in front of this guy who's like, well, he's just built, like, he looks like he's built for this. He's built for it. He did what, you know.
A warrior.
Yeah, a warrior. That's what he looks like. He's he did. If you could meet Achilles, he'd probably look a bit like Gavin, you know.
Good to go.
Yeah,
at any
like
time.
I'm ready. And I just thought, yeah, man, this guy's just, maybe it's just what he has to do because it's what he's designed for.
Yeah.
So I definitely put G up there because I just think he's a fascinating rider and he's just, there isn't, you know, he's done big Rampage. He's rock lined at Rampage that everyone else has gone, oh my God, that's crazy.
That massive jump to wall ride.
Oh God. Insane.
I mean, we're talking about, you know, I can tell you Seminac's good and I've watched all his films, but I can't remember a standout move in one of them. But I can remember G just pulling up.
Oh my God.
In slow motion. And then.
He's just got the willingness to go, you know, well, I'll fix this with an awful lot of speed and velocity and see what happens.
And if I come off, I can take it.
Yeah, I basically will knock this mountain over. Yeah, I was like, oh no, I broke the mountain. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, definitely G. He has done some crazy bits. We haven't done a podcast yet where Seminac has, well, this year anyway, where Seminac hasn't come up. Like everyone mentions him, which makes me think he's a very unique rider because he can just turn a very normal moment into a beautiful bit of art just by scrubbing a berm in a way that you go, wow, you know, oh my God, that was like the best.
And a big shout out to, I can't think of his name, but I've used him in films, the guy who does his the sound design for all of his films.
Keith White.
Yeah, Keith White, big shout out. So Seminac's obviously the man. You now rewatch those films and you can hear the cassette, you can hear the brake, you can hear the dirt. Yeah. And I think Keith has done a very good job of bringing out the emotion in his
runs. So is Keith the guy who does that?
Yeah. And he is like the industry, the Don. He's the man.
Yeah.
And I think he has played this huge part in all of the video pieces that...
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's really Brandon's interesting done. Because the audio is a massive part of it, you know. I mean, that's one of the things when you make a bike video, it's actually really hard to get everything into the video that's really going to do the bit of riding you're doing justice.
Yeah.
I remember doing, like, the road bike vids and we had mics in the water bottles.
Really?
Because we're just like, you just miss so much. Because when you're on the bike, you're like, oh, it went duck, 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 you know, and you like, you want that. And then you watch it back and then... they're too far away and you're like, the shot's great. You're like, yeah, but that wasn't what it was like. It was like, it went duck, duck, duck,
exactly.
Like that, and it went duck at the end. Where's that gone? And they're like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, I don't know what it was. It was but
you can feel it.
Yeah, and then we just ended up putting mics in all the bikes all the time because you'd use it so often.
What about in Road Bike Party when the bike goes underwater? We spoke about that the other day.
Yeah, it's just such a classic little bit of Robin Kitchen being clever, that is.
And that was early on, it was good.
Yeah, that was when you didn't know if you put a GoPro underwater whether it would still work or not. Yeah, we're like, let's put it underwater, you never know. And it was fine. What other rider would I go with? I mean, I could talk about...
So we got two there from you. We need almost a future rider. Who's coming?
Matt, help me out.
Jackson
Goldstone.
He's arrived, I think.
Yeah.
He's a bad boy, isn't he?
Oh, he's ridiculous.
followed him when he was a kid.
I mean, how quick is he going to get? That kid is crazy.
But then Jordan put 8 seconds into him at the Fort William National last week.
Really?
So I think...
That track can be a normaliser.
It is a leveller.
It's a weird one, isn't it, that track?
You've ridden it?
I have, kind of. I've kind of ridden it. I yeah, we pieced it together, let's say. Same. We actually took us about 10 days to do that run. So,
last time I raced it, I got to the deer fence and thought I was going to be sick. I was sat out of breath. And I'm like, hang on, just another 4 minutes.
It's just so rough. Oh, yeah. My God.
It's a bike killer.
And at the top, I had no idea until I rolled into it, literally as we were filming me go down it. Like, you think those top bits are like, oh, the chill bit, like, get going. There's no grip.
No.
None. It's like riding on, like, I don't know, little ball bearings. You go into the corner and it's like, is this going to stay here? I mean, I wasn't even going fast.
The only other place that's like that, but less dangerous, is Cannock Chase.
Yeah.
It's just a load of rocks embedded in the ground.
Yeah, oh, God, it's so frightening. Because those first berms are just loose. Then all of a sudden you're like, is there grip anywhere? And once you feel like there's no grip, you know that thing, if you're in like a section on a motorcycle and you like lose grip, then suddenly you're like, is there any grip anywhere?
Yeah.
And you don't know, and really, until you get to the next bit, and you're like, oh, no, it was a weird, you know, it was slimy there or whatever. Yeah. But the moment grip's gone, the confidence goes with it, doesn't it?
Straight out the door. How many practice runs did you do it for, William?
Practice? I never did any practice runs. We started filming.
So straight in?
I started filming at the top of the hill when we spent 4 days getting me down to the bottom of the hill.
Okay.
Because I'd do a shot. It was such a ridiculous... We're talking about a video right now called... Down Not Out is called, and basically we mock it up as if I win the Fort William World Cup on my electric bucket bike. Yeah, it's got Rob Warner commentating it, and if I do say so myself, although all I did was sit on a bike and be carried around all day, GMBN made a really great video. You know, everyone worked, I didn't, but everyone else worked so hard, and we had Marines with us. We had 4 Marines with us, and I'd ride through a shot. And we'd go, right, first positions, and then I'd get lifted off the bike, and the Marines would put me in a chair, and then they'd pick my chair up on their shoulders. So I'd be up like, I kept going like King Martin, being taken back up the hill. And I'd go back up the hill, and then they put me back on the bike, and we'd do the shot again. And we did that for like, and we just pieced an imaginary run together until the very last day where I actually rode into the finish line. And it was just a... Yeah, it was just a brilliant experience because it's such a like privilege to get to do it.
Yeah,
you know, because no one, you know, just the fact that the Fort William guys know me from years gone by, and they were like, "Yeah, all right, you can come and hang out as we're putting it all together." And
that's cool.
And it was really fun.
Buddy Meerkat was there.
Mm.
Nick Brown.
Yes,
Meerkat.
Yeah.
And I saw his sort of social media feed. And
yeah, he's in it, isn't he?
He's
on the sidelines the whole time. Yeah. It was a great video. It was fun. Those because I mean you're a video buff yourself. You love making a film. Saw a documentary you made the other day.
On motorbike trials.
Yeah. What other video stuff have you done?
That was like a side hustle really, and so I've done stuff for Renthal, made a mini documentary for them, and ODI Grips, and a lot of stuff for Orange, various other brands, and I just really love being around cameras and fiddling with them. And me and Doddy often have a WhatsApp chat about Fuji geekery. And
wow, you talk to Doddy about cameras? Oh man!
Well, he talks to me, and I get the info.
He knows a lot about it. He was just giving me just a moment ago before you arrived. This is Doddy. So if anyone doesn't know, if you haven't worked out what Doddy's like yet from the videos, this is what he's literally like day to day.
He's a legend.
I walked into the desk a minute ago, sat down, and Doddy's there, and there's a big bit of a shock, an internals of a shock, just on his desk, and I was like, oh, what's that from? And he said what shock it's from, and I was like, all right. And he said, do you want to see how it works? And I was like, yeah, okay. And he took it apart, every little bit of it, showed me all how it worked, and you could just see he was just in... He was doing exactly what he loves to do. This does this, this does it. And he took the whole thing literally down to like the smallest little parts. just like to show me, and I was watching it, and I was thinking, God, he just knows so much stuff. But then I was just thinking, God, he loves this.
He's passionate.
He absolutely loves
genuine
that stuff.
What's the bakery over here?
The Thoughtful Bakery.
The Thoughtful Bakery. So I went there on your recommendation.
Good, isn't it?
Doddy was in there, yeah, with some new forks, which we won't talk about now, but will be on his future show, I'm sure. And literally, there in the bakery, he's just like, oh, it's got this, it's got this, it does this, it does that. And I'm like, whoa.
He's great. Right?
I'm supposed to be in today in a tech talk with this brand, learning about the fork, but I think I just learned more in the bakery than they could teach me. So
he does know his stuff, and he's so passionate. And in I don't know if I've mentioned this today, but in Bentonville, Seattle, when I was over in California recently.
Talk to me about Seattle.
Yeah. Doddy is like a megastar.
Really?
He cannot move.
That's cool.
He cannot move. He was walking around this event and everyone's just like, oh, it's Doddy. And they all just want to get selfies with him, and because he's just like he's kind of like this constant supportive older brother to everyone in the mountain bike industry these days, because he's telling them how to look after their bikes, and they sort of feel really close to him.
All cameras, and he
really does. He's a really big support element of mountain bikers' life. So
yeah,
I really enjoyed seeing that while I was in Seattle in California just recently. So anyway, on that note, I think we're going to have to wrap it up there, dude. It's been a wicked chat. But I don't want to go over an hour, really, which I've just done, I think. It's done.
Hey, thanks, man.
Thank you so much for coming. You're going to be on the Dirt Shed Show later on.
Can't wait.
Chaos begin. But until then, thanks for listening and being part of the GMBM podcast. Make sure you head over to Trailhead when you're in Shrewsbury.
Please do. Kettle's always on. Beer's always in the fridge.
It's always good. It's a great shop to go to.
And thank you for having me, boys.
No worries,
man.
Let's go to lunch.
Let's do it.
Wicked. That was great fun, man.